Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. It's Friday night. Wyndham Clark has staked himself to a four-shot lead at the halfway point of this Players' Championship. Newsy day here at TPC Sawgrass. Wyndham's back-to-back 65s. Scotty Scheffler's neck issue. Rory McIlroy's backtrack in the second round. But first, Rex, a pretty significant development. You did not touch on it on live from, but we will on this very podcast. As first reported by Golf Week and confirmed by us, members of the PGA Tour Policy Board have been encouraged to meet with Yasser Al-Rumayyan, the governor of the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia. Rex, it was Webb Simpson last week at Bay Hill who expressed at least some surprise that the players hadn't yet been involved to this point in the proceedings and the negotiations with the PIF. What's your read on what this means now that they're being encouraged to do so?
It's actually encouraging on a couple of levels. I think both of us sort of had the same take following Jay Monahan, the commissioner of the PGA Tour's press conference earlier this week, that I didn't feel like we were any closer to a deal than we were on June 6th. He just didn't sound like, I mean, obviously he couldn't say much, but what he was able to say wasn't very encouraging. I actually read this as an encouraging sign, because I go back to the conversation you and I had last week about the idea, and Webb had told me at Bay Hill that we probably should have met, meaning the player directors, the six player directors, with the Saudis by now. I will point to what Adam Scott said, a player director, just this afternoon, when we kind of asked him, should you have met with them by now? And his reaction was, no, I should not. I should not be negotiating with them, period. That's not what he does best. That's not what they do best. They're all really good golfers, but that does not qualify them to sit in a room and negotiate a multi-billion dollar deal. That said, I think it is a good step if they do get in a room and at least they're face-to-face and they can have a conversation and find out exactly maybe the motivations of each side. If I think the PGA Tour and the players can understand the motivations from the public investment fund side, what are they hoping to accomplish in the game of golf? I think that will probably make the process go a little bit easier. Now, that reporting, who was done by our colleague Eamon Lynch, also said that this is not written in stone. It's supposed to happen Monday here in Ponte Vedra, but they said a lot of moving parts. As you pointed out, they're being encouraged to meet with them. But as Webb Simpson told us when he came off the golf course today and after he missed the cut, he was going home to Charlotte, and he didn't add much to that. I mean, I don't think we can read too much into it. Tiger Woods, a policy board player director, he's not even here this week. So it's kind of hard to figure out how all this is going to come together, but I read this as an encouraging step.
Is there anything more awkward, Rex, than trying to grab a player after he just missed the cut for something that's kind of tangential to the actual golf performance? Like you're sitting there, fingers crossed, Webb Simpson had a 6-footer for birdie. If he makes it, he makes the cut. If he misses it, he is heading home. Instead, he misses it. It was awkward. Webb Simpson, typically
nicest man in the world, had exactly no interest in this whatsoever.
Completely gregarious. Always accommodating with his time. He still was in this front. Did confirm some details of it on. He went into the night. To your point, Rex, I understand that the PGA Tour players are not hammering out the terms here. They're not in the room negotiating this billion-dollar deal.
And they shouldn't
potentially
be.
And they shouldn't be. But I agree with you that I still think this is an important and a necessary step. The fact that they can now look Yasser in the face and ask, what is it that you actually want? Yeah. You know, do you care about the future of the PGA Tour? Do you want to take it over? Can you part with team golf? How essential is that to you for the future of the PGA Tour potentially? How many of your LIV guys actually want to come back? As Adam Scott told us, you know, you're essentially now putting a face to the name. As Jordan Spieth said, you know, if there's any sort of potential for negotiation, it's a must that the players actually get into the room and meet with representatives from the PIF. And this is obviously the big dog. I agree with you. And just to put a fine point, I think it's a positive development that underscores the desire for more urgency here. Sausage fingers up, which means the floor is yours.
Well, it's important to read the second half of that Adam Scott quote that you just did. And it's, quote, "I'm not negotiating, and thank God for everyone that I'm not. I'm curious to see how that all pans out." This goes to the idea, and again, what we discussed last week, the player directors will ultimately have a say in this because the policy board, the board of directors for PGA Tour Enterprises will ultimately decide if there's going to be a deal with the public investment fund. But I was told this last week by an agent, and I was taken by how kind of profound it is. I hadn't really thought about it. You're taking six of the world's best golfers, maybe the best golfer of all time in Tiger Woods, and you're assuming just because they can play this game really, really well, that they're also qualified to negotiate a multi-billion dollar, very nuanced deal. That's akin to, and again, this isn't my take, it was someone else's take, so I don't want to take the credit for this one, but that's akin to going to the CEO of AT&T and be like, hey, you're a really good executive. You should have a tea time at Augusta National for the Masters. They will have a vote, and thankfully, they now have Joe Ogilvie, who's a director liaison on the board of directors for Enterprises. They also have Colin Neville, who has been an advisor for them, a very, very smart guy who has been involved in these types of deals. They have a lot of people around them to help them. But no, I don't think any of them should have been in the room negotiating and hashing out the finer points of this. Getting face-to-face is great, but this is just the first step.
And look, I think it's sometimes forgotten that the players are the product here. You know, you can hammer out the billions of dollars that are going to be, but there is no product worth investing in if the players are not involved, if the players are not kind of creating what potentially could be, I think, a really awesome product in the next couple years. We've had so much turmoil over the past couple years, so much division. I think both products, as we discussed in the preview podcast, are suffering at the current moment. But there is potential in a year or 2 years where something really awesome can emerge. I agree. This is a very positive step. How about, Rex, the Players Championship? It was also a newsy day on that front as well. I think we first start not actually with Wyndham Clark, but the world number one, Scottie Scheffler, the world beater. You and I talked to Scottie Scheffler of the field. Well, now that is a little bit of a concern on the 12th hole. Actually, this is Scottie Scheffler's second shot into 11, his second hole of a day. Felt a little bit of a twinge in his neck. Started getting worked on by a PGA Tour masseuse on the 12th hole, 14th hole, 16th hole, and it continued throughout the rest of the round. Scottie Scheffler still played pretty well. So shot a couple under par. He still is within shouting distance of Wyndham Clark. But Scottie did not speak with the media afterward. Went to get more treatment. Ted Scott, his caddy, stiff-armed me in an aggressive Heisman pose to get more details on that front as well. But to you, Rex, how much of a concern is Scottie's neck issue as we turn towards the weekend?
I think it always has to be a concern. We've seen, we just talked about Tiger Woods. There's a reason why he's not in the field this week, because injury just one by one by one. It was just a conga line of injuries that eventually took him out of the game, and we're probably not going to see him again until the Masters. You did the reporting on that earlier tonight that he's not going to play in Tampa. So please go to NBCSports.com/golf to get that news, because that was a huge update that we had to get on the website.
I said there was a minute chance that he could play.
There was no chance. There was never any chance.
And I mean,
it's just funny that you felt compelled to write the story. I just got a chuckle that you.
The only reason I wrote the story because this is the Valspar represented Tiger's last realistic chance to get a tune-up start.
Why can't he play Houston?
Instead,
why can't he play San Antonio? There's two more tournaments.
He's never played Houston. He hasn't played Texas Open since '96. He obviously is not going to play the week before the Masters. I don't know. It was wishful thinking. Instead, Tiger Woods, 15-time major champion, is going to be showing up at Augusta National with 1.5 competitive rounds officially under his belt in 2024. Right.
Podcast for another day. This is a mini fact. We digress. To answer your question, yes, of course it's concerning. And look, it is interesting that apparently he woke up and didn't have any problems. He went through his warm-up, didn't have any problems. I thought it was fascinating. He played the first hole, which was the 10th hole here at TPC Sawgrass. Textbook. Drive right down the middle. My favorite drive, as I've said numerous times this week, hits it to 2 feet, taps in for birdie. You're like, oh, he is off and running. And whatever happened on the 11th hole, he gets to the 12th tee. He starts having therapy. Of course, you're going to have concerns. And there's an utter lack of any information whatsoever. So we're trying to fill the void here. I would caution that you can sleep wrong. You can swing in a weird way and end up just tweaking something. I think we've all done that. I mean, I really think we need to wait this one out. But yeah, he's the world number one. He is in full stride. Yeah, I mean, he was 1A this week, and my 1A is injured. My 1B went in reverse. So it wasn't a very good day for me.
Yeah, it was certainly disappointing just because it seemed like Scottie was going to be in full flight. As you mentioned, like he hit it to 3 feet on the opening hole and looked like he was going to be off to the races. He said it really affects him on his takeaway, It's his left shoulder neck area and sort of dragging the club away is where he felt a little bit of a twinge there. It didn't necessarily.
Sorry, I'm getting distracted here because I'm looking at you through the window to my left here, and what people can't see, and this is a visual medium for some people, you're doing the swing and you're showing the shoulder.
Yes.
Do it again. Yes. Yeah, do it again.
It's here and it's there.
And it's there. All right.
And it's there. And it feels a little bit of a twinge in his neck. Like he still shot 69.
Theater of the mind.
He still has a great opportunity to win this golf tournament. He's six shots back heading into the weekend. And you look at the way that he played on Friday. Maybe he was not 100%. We talked about on live from. He was swinging 2 to 4 miles per hour on average club head speed. A little bit slower, and yet he still missed just 3 fairways. He still missed just 4 greens in regulation. As I mentioned, he still shot 69 late tee times for the third round now that we've had daylight savings time. And so he's essentially going to have about 24 hours to get right, to get treatment. I really don't think, I'm assuming this is not some sort of structural issue, I really don't think it should be that big of an obstacle for him. I think the bigger obstacle, Rex, is the deficit that he's facing with six shots and also the player that he's going to have to hunt down, the very player that he beat last week at Bay Hill, and that's Wyndham Clark. What stood out to you about his back-to-back 65 here to open up a pretty comfortable cushion?
It's been so easy to overlook Wyndham Clark because he's kind of a quiet guy. He doesn't do a lot. I think in a lot of ways, he's a little bit like Scotty. And we talked about this earlier in the week about boring golf. And it was funny to run that by players. And I think it was Max Homa who was asked, do you think Scotty Scheffler plays boring golf? And his retake was that should be aspirational for every golfer around the planet. Hitting fairways and greens should be what we all want to do. If we could all play boring golf, imagine how much fun the game would actually be. I kind of think Wyndham sort of has been doing that the last year, but I was fascinated today. He kind of talked about he'd always been a good ball striker, but the putting just hadn't been matched up to that. And we asked him today, what was the low point when it comes to your putting? And it was here a year ago at TPC Sawgrass. He was top 10 ball striking and bottom third of the field in putting. He goes to Tampa next week, where I can't believe Tiger Woods isn't playing. It was the same thing on round one, where he was top 10 ball striking, bottom third of the field in putting. And that's when he switched to that jailbreak mallet putter. And since then,
I gotta have that putter. Not gonna lie.
It is a good looking putter. It's a very, very good looking putter. And since then, he's been the most dominant player on the planet. He's won 2 signature events, finished second last week in a signature event, won a US Open. And it's been sort of this climb that, again, he's been really easy to overlook. He's been easy to sort of dismiss because he did it in such a way that isn't flashy. It's not Jordan Spieth out there. It's not even Rory McIlroy, and we're going to get into his round. That was just a wild, wild day for him. That's not the way he does it. If you watch him play golf, this is old school sleeping on the couch Sunday afternoon because he's not really doing anything to ignite the imagination. He's just being brilliant.
Fascinating that you call Wyndham Clark the most dominating player on the planet.
Last 12 months.
Not sure I would say that either. He does not have as many wins as John Rahm has had. He does not have as many wins as Scotty Scheffler's had. Heck, he doesn't even have as many wins as Joaquin Neiman has had.
Oh, that's not true. I'm talking about the last 12 months. Since last year's Players Championship, he has more wins than John Rahm and Scotty Scheffler. Do the math. Are you counting Liv? Are you counting
he's
the
got
hero?
Three. Scotty has, well,
one.
Yeah, true. Okay.
John Rahm.
He still is not dominant. I think if he's not dominant, I think he has proven himself, Rex, to be. I think I called him
a world
game
class
hunter
player.
On Thursday's podcast. Like, all he's doing now is showing up in big events. You look at what he's done in 2024. He won Pebble, which was shortened to 54 holes. He finished second at Bay Hill, and now he's doing what he's doing here at the PGA Tour's flagship event. I found it interesting, and I wrote tonight on NBCSports.com/golf how much Wyndham Clark has been pushed by Scotty Scheffler, Scotty's excellence, Scotty's consistency. Wyndham popped up and had a career year in 2023, and yet he was still 9 top 10s fewer than what Scotty Scheffler put together during what was his back-to-back Player of the Year campaign. I think there's a very interesting...
Scotty's been more consistent, I will grant you
for
that.
Sure, for sure. Like, it's a very interesting contrast in the two players. Scotty's the best player, tee to green, since peak Tiger Woods, but but Wyndham Clark is much longer off the tee, averaging 15 yards longer than Scottie Scheffler. He's a much better putter, as we've seen, not just over the course of these first 36 holes, but over the course of their careers. Like, Wyndham Clark has always been a top-tier putter. And so you combine that length with his proficiency on the greens, and now the missing piece is Wyndham Clark has talked incessantly, as was showcased in the Full Swing documentary on Netflix. The self-belief and the confidence in the mental game is really what has taken his game to the next level. Wyndham Clark was always a standout junior player. He was a co-college player of the year with Sam Burns at Oklahoma State and finally at Oregon during his senior year. But the fact that he couldn't get there and attain that level of success as a PGA Tour player really tore at him, really gnawed at him. And it took him 3 or 4 years before he ended up linking up with Julie Ellion to really kind of access his enormous gifts. It's a lot of fun, I think, to watch a player who's 30 years old and is now coming into his own and watching him kind of embrace these big stages as he has done here, including at the Players' Championship. Rex, what the heck happened to Rory? What happened to your boy? He shot 73. He declined to talk to the media. He's now 8 shots back. Were we too quick to anoint him as back?
What gets me is it's not what we thought it was going to be. We thought it was going to be his iron play because that had been the issue. I think you and I had fun on Wednesday night kind of sorting this all out. I put him 1B. Scotty was 1A for my picks so far this week. And I admitted it was a leap of faith. I mean, I was kind of buying what his camp was telling me, what he was telling me. Clued into something that he didn't have last week at Bay Hill. Two different swings. He's got a driver and a wood swing, and he's got an iron swing. And on day one, you kind of saw this. Now, he had two terrible driver swings, which led to those two in the water, led to drops, and we can get into Dropgate at another time. However, it was today, he was just, it just wasn't two sort of random offshoots. He kind of dismissed those two swings yesterday. He said he wasn't in the right mind frame, that he wasn't committed to the shot. He hit some wild, wild drives today. I mean, not just inopportune hooks or what I would call just kind of out of nowhere. He's cruising along and everything's fine. He didn't make a par today until the seventh hole. I mean, he was either brilliant or terrible. And I've had this conversation with Rory before, and I know he was angry coming off the golf course, as he should be. But if you look at the amount of birdies he made versus the amount of bogeys and others,
it is the exact same number of birdies that Wyndham Clark has made, and yet he's 8 shots back.
Yeah, and that has everything to do with what you did on the other holes. And this is kind of quintessential Rory, isn't it? I think we've talked about this before, the idea that he has to be the greatest star player, the greatest player who is in that upper echelon, who at a moment's notice can just come unraveled. Like, look, Scottie Scheffler can...
He's fantastic, but flawed.
Maybe Scottie Scheffler could... Yeah.
He always has been. I think that's what makes him such a fascinating player.
And I will say, and we kind of got into this last night, and I had to give you credit, although you just said that Wyndham Clark is entertaining. And I'm going to go the other way. And I know I don't find him particularly. Yes, you did. And that's why I was kind of curious, because I said it's fun about Scottie
Scheffler, who's coming into his own. I don't think he's necessarily a dynamic player. I think it's fun to see a player coming into his own and thrive on the big stages. That's
well, and this goes to Scottie Scheffler playing quote unquote boring golf. And we kind of disagreed on that. What Rory McIlroy did today, it was ugly. I'm sure he's angry. And sometimes it was hard to watch, but man, it's entertaining. It's why Jordan Spieth is so popular, because he's entertaining, because you know he's not going to hit fairways and greens. He's going to put himself over in the trees, and he's going to have to pull off some sort of hero shot. And then he's going to have to make a putt that he's going to have to tell Greller to go get it out of the hole. That's the beauty of the, sort of these players, even Tiger Woods. I mean, if you take 1999, 2000, 2001 out of the equation, those were the pinnacle years for Tiger driving it. He didn't really drive it that well, but he always found a way to be brilliant, even though he didn't drive it that well. That's why I think he was so entertaining, and he won more than anyone else in, you know, of our time. But when you look at what Rory did today, like that's the quintessential round, is it not? Like, that is his round. If you had to show Rory McIlroy without actually showing Rory McIlroy in just scorecard form, just throw that scorecard up.
It's like quintessential post-2014 Rory. When we still think of Rory in 2011, 2012, 2014, he has a down year in 2013, but 2014, like the dominant Rory, the Rory that could blow the doors off a tournament. This is the Rory who we saw so phenomenal, so crisp on day one, and then flustered, frustrated, missing both directions. And this was actually, I was thinking this in my head, and I feel bad that I didn't verbalize it, because I actually was thinking it, that when you have these two swing thoughts, as Rory has had, and let's have some context here, that Rory McIlroy is driving the ball as well as he ever has in his entire career, and quite possibly one of the best.
Until today and yesterday.
Yes.
Well, let's footnote that.
And entering this week, he was driving the ball as well as he ever has in his entire career, and one of the best driving periods we've seen in the history of the PGA Tour. And yet he arrived here at TPC Sawgrass adamant and insistent that he was going to figure this out and create this driver swing and the iron swing. Well, it's clear that the iron swing and the thought he has may have now infected what was actually working so well with his driver. For the first time in ages, I don't have the stats in front of me, he is actually losing strokes off the tee to the field. Rory McIlroy is losing strokes off the tee to the field. You couple that with some really poor scrambling. He's just 3 of 10. He hit four fewer greens than he did on Friday. It was definitely a setback, understandably, incredibly frustrated second round for Rory McIlroy. Rec, what is one thing that you're looking forward to watching Saturday at the Players' Championship? Do you think we're going to have another situation like 2018? Remember, Webb Simpson was 5 shots clear at the halfway point, increased that to 7, and then Sunday was an absolute snooze? Or do you think a Xander Schauffele, you think a Nick Taylor, you think someone like Maverick McNealy can pop up, a Scottie Scheffler, once he gets right, you think he can pop up and make this a tournament?
All afternoon, you were piping off about the Webb Simpson comparison. You couldn't wait to throw Nailed that
it.
One out there.
Nailed it.
If he's leading by 7 tomorrow, yeah, like, you're just going to go ahead and write that column and go home. You're not even going to come back on Sunday, are you?
No, and like, I went back and looked at my Webb Simpson one. I was actually pretty proud of that one. It was back on Mother's Day. Good little story. I think that one got another honorable mention in the writing contest. No one gets more honorable mentions than me.
Also, Rams. I'm looking forward to a couple things. One, we spent a lot of time talking about Scottie Scheffler. You do want to go out. Like, we're both gonna shuffle over to the range tomorrow morning, wait for him to show up, and see exactly what we get out of Scottie Scheffler. Because you don't want to think this is bad. But again, anytime you start dealing with injuries in and around the neck, whether if this was the neck or the shoulder, whatever the case may be, you always get a little bit concerned. So that's probably 1A. I am going to go out and watch Mav McNealy. Because as you and I discussed tonight, if you want to listen in and get smarter at golf, and Brandel Chamblee is really,
get smarter
really good
at anything. Listen to Mav McNealy.
Get smarter at anything, but get smarter at golf. Brandel Chamblee, look, man, like I get smarter every time I listen to that guy talk. I'd like to think folks like Robbie from Lake City. Robbie, it was so great to meet you today. Tune into our podcast, maybe get a little bit smarter at golf. But if you really want to dig down, like, just go to Mav McNealy and ask him whatever you want to do. He was asked today after he finished up his round about the challenges of this golf course, and he essentially went 18 holes on us. Like, you got to hit a draw here, you got to hit a fade there, this one you got to end up on the right side of the fairway, but if you're too far right, like, he broke it down in a way that was succinct, it was intelligent, it was bulletproof. And he just strikes me, and you've been on the bandwagon since way back when he was in college, so I know that, but for those of us who haven't been paying attention the way you have, he is such a breath of fresh air. And now, like, the way he described his swing and what he had to do following the injuries of last season, it's an entirely different swing. I'm so encouraged through 2 rounds. I just want to see. I don't know if he can win. Maybe he can. Maybe he can't. I just want to see if he can sustain it for 2 more days.
No rooting in the press box,
nope.
Of course, but you absolutely cannot help but root for Maverick McNealy. By far the smartest athlete I have ever covered in my journalism career on any topic. And so it'd be great to see. I do agree with you. He's the type of player that you would want to run for PAC chairman, put him on the policy board. He could do wonders for the PGA Tour. Thank you for asking. Most curious to see what Xander Schauffele does in this third round. Live From did a breakdown of the swing changes that he's undergoing on Thursday. And they showed him burning the midnight oil with his swing coach, Chris Como, on the range afterward. Xander's really the only mistake that he had in the second round was a terrible swing on 11, the par 5, where he's thinking eagle, instead makes double. Otherwise, he was incredibly solid from tee to green. I just wonder, with the swing changes that he's undergoing now, if he can hold up in crunch time with the pressure. He's not won in nearly 2 years on the PGA Tour. I think it's also an interesting contrast it serves with those two players, with Xander Schauffele, who's obviously very technical at this point, trying to really implement these changes, and Wyndham Clark, who is free, his mind is uncluttered. He hasn't worked with a swing coach for years. I think it's a very interesting contrast. And as of right now, as we sit here on Friday night, I think I know who I would trust more in crunch time with the pressure at its highest. Right now, it'd be Wyndham Clark.
Gotta be Wyndham.
But I think Saturday would go a long way towards telling us if that is actually true.
And I will say, outside of you and I think Chris Como has probably put in the most hours this week of anyone. He did a marathon massive session with Jason Day on Monday. And then, as you pointed out, he was working very, very late with Xander. He's got other players in the field. The dude is putting in the hours.
Absolutely. As always, this one went longer than we were intending, but there was a little bit of news with the secret meeting that is apparently not so secret. Anymore. But for more information, you guys know the drill. Make sure to go to nbcsports.com/golf for all of Rex and Mine's latest updates. On Saturday, you and I will be doing our little dance at 11:15 a.m. Eastern time, if you folks want to catch that as well. In the meantime, thank you guys, as always, for listening, for the support. Robbie, we loved you. Thanks for coming to meet us today. Any other fans who's at TPC Sawgrass, Rex and I would love to see you. We do appreciate the support. As always, we'll talk to you guys in 24 hours. See you then.
Pray for me in the morning.